It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike puts on a coast-to-coast question and answer battle. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please, as you know, is completely unrehearsed and unpremeditated. And the experts have never seen or heard any of the questions they're about to be asked tonight. Our brave board this evening will consist of our three regulars, John Tieran, sports writer and first-class fact retainer, Franklin P. Adams, conductor of the New York Post's Conning Tower, and Oscar Levant, composer, pianist, writer. Our guest of honor is one who has delighted most of us on the stage and screen, I'm sure. She is Mary Boland, who is touring the Straw Hat Circuit this summer and is appearing at the Westport Playhouse next week. Very happy to have you with us, Miss Boland. And by the way, last week, some of you may remember that I kept on insisting that the Italo-Ethiopian War began in 1934. And Mr. Gunther and Mr. Durante, our guests, said it was 1935. Very stubborn of them. Well, it seems that there were what are called incidents in 1934, but the real shindig did begin in 1935. Mr. G and Mr. D, wherever you may be, my apologies. You see, Miss Boland, even Information Police itself can make mistakes. There's nothing to worry about.
Oh, so bad.
However,
this will be the open season encyclopedia.
Maybe. If that is the case, for every question that Miss Boland and her assistants miss tonight, Lucky Strike will ring up $25. And that's to be paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with the first question from Dorothy Brissett of New York City. How did each of these numbers figure in the recent news? There are four different numbers. Let's see if you have three out of four. The first number is 28. How did it figure in the recent news? 28. This will be of interest to a large section of our population. Mr. Adams? You were pointing at me. Never point. Mr. Tieran?
Well, I wasn't sure about the age, 28, with regard to the draft.
That's right.
The general staff let it be known that they didn't care to take on men over 28 anymore.
Yes, it's the new draft age limit. It's quite right, Mr. Grimm.
It was only passed yesterday in the House. You didn't give me a chance to assimilate it.
Well, you're usually even quicker than that, Mr. Levant. How about this one? This takes longer to assimilate. It's a bigger number. 80,000. How did 80,000 figure in the news recently? Mr. Levant, is that your hand up?
I was wondering whether that was an attendance at a fight, but that's a long time ago.
Mr. Kieran?
It has to do, I believe, that's a military force, isn't it?
That's right. Iceland.
Iceland is right. Who's military force?
United States of America.
No, they haven't had that many there yet. The English, England is supposed to have had that many.
Yes, they are the British occupying force in Iceland, about 80,000 men. That was the figure used in the papers. Now, how about the number 49? Mr. Adams.
That is Mr. DiMaggio's consecutive hit.
Yes, the number of successive games in which he
today was 50.
I didn't see the afternoon papers.
Well, the House passed the draft yesterday, and DiMaggio had his 50th straight game today. That's the way things go.
It's wonderful how you remember. 450 would be even upper to data, as Mr. Levant points out. Now, how about the number 1476? 1476. Does that associate with anything in your minds? 1476.
1476.
1476, Mr. Adams, that's right. Mr.
Kieran. Was that the number of planes turned out in the last plane month?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's very good, Mr. Kieran. That's good going. The number of military airplanes delivered in June to the Army, Navy, and Great Britain, which is an all-time high for us and one that we'll probably beat next month. Now, how about this from Jackie Mullen of New York? Get two out of three if you can. Here's the first question. Name two statesmen who were the subjects of biographies by Emil Ludwig, the famous biographer. Well, Mr. LeBac.
Napoleon and President Roosevelt.
Yes, there would be two. There were others. Mr. Adams, do you have another in mind?
No, those are the two I knew.
Lincoln.
That's right.
Bismarck. Miss Bowen.
Denial.
I beg pardon?
You won't take denial.
Not a
no, hardly a statement. Good book, though. Might as well get that settled between us, Miss Bowen. Name two presidents who were the subjects of biographies by the American biographer W. E. Woodward. How about that? Miss Adams.
U.S. Grant.
Yes. Very good.
And
another president. Mr. LeFant.
I was going to say Grant, and I'll be wrong on the next one. It's either Jackson or somebody else.
Well, that's certainly narrowing the field.
It isn't Taylor, is it? Nobody writes biographies of Taylor.
No, nor did Mr. Woodward. The answer is Washington. He wrote biographies of Grant and of Washington. That gives us one wrong. Now we have to get the next one right to get by on this. Otherwise, those encyclopedias that you spoke about, Miss Boland, would begin flying out. Name two queens who were the subjects of biographical plays by Maxwell Anderson. Two queens. Miss Boland?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
And,
Got another queen in mind? Mr. Levant?
Mary, Queen of Scotland.
Mary of Scotland, yes. Elizabeth and Mary. Those are the two. Well, that sends us through with flying color to the next question. It comes from Helene Branch of Pittsburgh. Again, get two out of three if you can. What noteworthy experience did each pair of these people have in common? I'm going to name three sets of pairs. Now, the first pair consists of Jean-Paul Marat and Mrs. Edward Smith. What did they have in common? Marat, M-A-R-A-T. Mr. Kieran?
Were they killed in the bath?
Is that a guess, Mr. Kieran?
No, I know one was.
And how about the other?
Well, the other one I never heard of. I wouldn't have done it myself, I'll say that.
Miss Bullen, how about Mr. Kieran's answer?
Well, it is correct as far as absolutely killed in the bath, yes.
Who was
I didn't have a hand in it.
You'll tell us about Marat, but Miss Boland will tell us about Mrs. Edward Smith. Who was Marat, Mr. Kieran?
Well, Jean-Paul Marat, he was one of the leaders of the French Revolution.
Yes, and how was he killed in Bayonne?
Stabbed
in the bathtub?
In the bathtub,
yes, right. Very vulnerable place. And who did it?
A lady, did.
Charlotte Corday.
Well, I wouldn't call her a lady. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Charlotte Corday, yes.
I still say she was a lady.
And how about Mrs. Edward Smith? Who was she? Miss Boland, do you seem to know the answer to that one?
No, I don't think so.
What was her first name that wasn't Mrs. Edward?
I don't know. I don't know what her first name was. But she was married to Mr. Edward Smith, apparently. And she was killed by her husband. He was the celebrated bathtub murderer of England. I think they called him Tubby for short. Mr. Kieran either guessed or knew the right answer. How about this one? What noteworthy experience did this pair have in common? Leon Gambetta and Rudolf Hess. And Mr. LeBac.
Well, I'm going to guess, too. They fled.
I beg your pardon?
They took a powder.
Oh, you're trying to make it clearer to me. They fled. You're all right so far. Could you...
You want me to tell you where Gambetta fled?
Yeah. From where to where?
Mr.
What
Kieran
is
so anxious.
He fled to France.
Pardon?
Fled to France, didn't
no,
he?
No, he was in...
He fled from France, but to Italy?
No.
Spain?
No.
Well, I don't know where he
was. If you tell me who Gambetta was, I'll bet I can answer.
Mr. Kieran, who was
he
Gambetta?
He was a French statesman.
Yeah? What period?
Oh, Gambetta was...
On Tycott's time?
No.
No, a little before, I think.
Got a street named after
19th century.
Yes, I think around the 1870. Miss Boland, any idea on this at all?
No.
Well, Gambetta left Paris for a tour. Paris was besieged at the time. He left Paris in a balloon.
Oh, yes.
Now, the resemblance between the flight of Rudolf Hess from Germany to Scotland, of course, is obvious. I don't know whether to call you boys and girls right on this.
Oh, that's wrong.
Wrong, all right.
Why, they had that in common.
How about Lucille Watson and Miss Boland? Miss Boland.
What
do those two have in common? Lucille Watson and Mary Boland.
They're elegant actresses.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very nice of you.
Thank you very much.
But that's too easy.
They must have played the same part, one on the stage and one in pictures.
What was the part?
Miss Boland, I don't know.
Miss Boland?
Yes, it was in Pride and Prejudice.
In Pride and Prejudice. And what was the part?
Mrs. Bennet.
Mrs. Bennet. Miss Lucille Watson played it on the stage and Miss Boland in the movies. You knew that, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
Is this Miss Branch of Pittsburgh a friend of yours by any chance?
Who?
Miss Branch of Pittsburgh?
I don't know one in Pittsburgh.
You know me. I'm from Pittsburgh.
How about this one? This comes from a seat of learning, Cambridge, Massachusetts, thought up by Mr. A. Fitzgerald. I think we ought to get all on this. It's a very easy question. What current novel is summed up in each of these phrases? Here's the first. East Side Boy becomes head of movie studio. Mr. Levant.
What makes Sammy run?
Yes, who wrote it?
Bud Schulberg.
A boy. That is easy, isn't
it? If you'd read it about 3 weeks ago, it's very easy.
I haven't read it, but I've heard of it. Now, how about this one? Adventures of a Loyalist in the American Revolution. Adventures of a Loyalist in the American Revolution. Miss Boland?
Oliver Whistler.
Oliver Whistler. That's quite right. Who wrote it?
The man who wrote Northwest Passage.
That's right. Thank you, Miss Adamson, Miss Boland. That's quite right. The experiences of an American teacher in a recent war. What novel does that describe? The experiences of an American teacher.
I got that.
Okay, Mr. Levant.
You're going to count me wrong, but I'm right. It's Louis Fisher. He was a teacher for a very short time when he was in Philadelphia. He was in the Loyalist War, participated as a quartermaster.
That's perfectly true, Mr. Levant.
You were going to call me wrong.
No, I'm not going to call you wrong. I think that's an ingenious answer, but I did ask for novels.
Well, how much? Well,
And that is Mr. Fisher's book, a very good book, is an autobiography rather than a novel.
I prefer autobiography.
That may be so. We have to get the novel, however.
What was the question?
Experiences of an American teacher in a recent war. I think we've had enough time on that. It's Ernest Hemingway, For Whom the Bell Tolls. He's a teacher of Spanish, as you remember, somewhere in Montana, wasn't it, or Wyoming. And that will send $25 to Miss Fitzgerald, or it may be Miss Fitzgerald, plus a set of the Britannica. How about this one? From R.A. Benn of Weehawken, New Jersey. Get 3 out of 4. This is a poetical question. Can you quote a line of poetry, including the word forever, by each of the following 4 poets? Byron, Swinburne, Keats, Tennyson. Suppose we begin with Byron. Mr. Kieran.
Fare thee well, and if forever, then forever fare thee well.
Yes, that's quite right. And what's the poem called?
Well, it's goodbye to his wife.
Farewell.
I think just fairly well, as Mr. Adams says. Now, how about Swinburne? A word with a word with Mr. Bowen?
No, I was just waiting at you. Oh.
You mind if I wave back?
Don't say yoo-hoo, you'll get in trouble.
Miss Karen.
From too much hope of living, from too much love of living, and so forth, that no life lives forever, that even the weariest river winds somewhere safe to sea.
Yeah, very good. Those
lines of Posh or Pine or Proserpine.
By Swinburne. That's very good. Now, how about a line of poetry with forever in it? By Keats. Keats, Mr. Adams.
Thing of Beauty and so forth.
That's a dandy. Thing of Beauty is a joy forever. And there are 4 lines of Keats in which there practically is nothing but the word forever. Remember, Mr. Kieran?
In the ode on a Grecian urn. Forever.
That's right.
Piping songs forever new.
That's right. And the word forever runs through that like a refrain. We have Byron, Swinburne, Keats, all of whom built on the word forever.
How about Nevermore from The Raven?
I'd like to get it in for you, Mr. Levant. But we don't have Poe tonight. We have Tennyson.
Tennyson?
Tennyson. Mr. Adams.
The Brook.
Good old Brook. How does it go?
Men may come, but men may go, but I go on forever.
Yes. It's interesting, I think, that all these 4 poets are what I call romantic poets, and the word forever is a sort of romantic word. An illusion?
Delusion.
Yeah. That's very melancholy of you.
Calverley wrote a poem called Forever, too.
Is the word forever in the poem?
Forever. 'Tis a single word. Our rude forefathers deemed it too. Can you imagine so absurd a view?
Goody, goody. Thank you. How about this one from Isabel Taylor of Chicago? This is directed right at the head of Mr. Levant. The studio pianist is going to play 3 famous octave passages. And Mr. Levant will identify them and continue them at another piano, maybe. Get 2 out of 3, Mr. Levant, if you can. Now, studio pianist, let's have the first octave.
Second circle.
Was it easy, Mr. Levant?
Well, he was playing it. It wasn't hard for me.
There's a knock that passes three secret, though.
I didn't hear you go on with it very
well.
Good. The Schumann A minor concerto. Now maybe the next one will be a little harder.
Go ahead. How do I stop? And until you have a nervous breakdown.
Tchaikovsky
B flat. It requires a lot of muscular effort.
You're lazy this evening. Pardon? That gives us 2 out of 2, Mr. Levant.
Very good. That was crazy this evening?
No, lazy. Can't you spell? All right. Let's have a thing. What was it you were playing?
Brahms B flat. Harvest plays all those things wonderfully.
Also well, you mean. Thank you very much. So far, Dr. Strike has paid out $25, and that means one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross points out that nearly all of you smokers agree on one thing.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you nearly all want a milder, better-tasting cigarette. But how to get what you want? Well, that's where a knowledge of tobacco comes in handy. Because the way to a milder, better-tasting cigarette is to select one made from better tobaccos, the kind of tobacco that you'll find in Lucky Strike. Yes, at auction after auction, we pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. For example, at Oxford, North Carolina last season, the American Tobacco Company paid 30% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 30% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought goes into Lucky's. Mr. Fadiman, is it any wonder that with independent tobacco experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1?
No, Mr. Cross, you gave an excellent reason in just 53 seconds. And now we'll go on with the second half of the program this evening with a question from Mr. Levant's hometown, Pittsburgh, from Miss Laureline Strawn. Get 2 out of 3 on this, if you can. In what play is each of these ideas suggested? Now, the first idea, not a bad one, the woman pursues the man. In what play would you find that idea suggested, Mr. Adams?
Arms of the Man. And there's the other Shaw play.
Man Superman,
Mr. Bolin. That's quite right. I think Mr. Adams is thinking of that one. Mr. Levant?
How about What Every Woman Knows?
No, I don't think so. How about this one? In what play is each of these, is this idea suggested, that a woman is behind every successful man?
Well, that's it. What everyone
now
knows.
You've got it, yes.
But she pursues him, too.
It doesn't say how far
she
behind.
She got him.
That gives us 2 out of 2. Now, how about this very simple notion, that women are cats? In what play would you find that suggested? Suggested, that's not the word to use.
That's in the play, too?
Yes, it is. Mr. Kieran?
I didn't see it, but women...
Miss Bolin?
Tell you the truth?
She sort of mellows up a little
later
on.
The women
by Claire Booth Luce.
Is that what she characterizes them as, cats?
No, but that's what we're characterizing them as, you see.
That's a lot of sense you have there.
How about this one from Ed Moore of Providence, Rhode Island? Get 3 out of 4 if you can. Now, I have 4 terms here that are used in warfare. I want you to give me the origin of the words. Aviator, marine, cavalry, artillery. Shall we begin with aviator? What's the origin, Miss Bolin? You haven't made a mistake so far. Miss Kieran?
From ave, the Latin, a bird to fly.
Yes, a bird to fly. That was what was in your mind, Miss Bolin, wasn't it?
Yes.
That's right. Now, how about marine? Marine, the, how about Miss Bolin?
Comes from the ocean, from the sea.
Yes, from what word?
From Mary.
Mary, that's absolutely right. You see, you have lots of things in your mind, Miss Bowling, just not giving your mind a chance. How about cavalry? Can you help us out on that? Miss Curran.
Caballus, a horse.
Caballus, a horse, yes. And finally, artillery. This is the hard one. Artillery. What's the derivation of it?
Not from art, is it?
Are you asking me for that?
I'm killing time while I figure out the answer.
What's artillery from? Mr. Curran?
Well, it probably comes from the same roots as artifacts.
Yes, artifacts. You and Mr. Adams got it at the same time. It comes from the Latin ars artis, art or skill, which is exactly what Mr. Levant said in his spontaneous.
It's on MGM, you know, ars artis?
That's right. That's how you would know.
Is that where they got artillery from?
No, but that's where you got your knowledge of Latin from. The next one is from Mrs. Stuart Richardson of Ocean Grove, New Jersey. And by the way, I think you boys and girls are very good this evening. Let's see if we can't stump you on this one. I want you to make up a salad for me from book titles, mentioning at least three of the important ingredients in a salad. Any kind of salad will do. Mr. Bowler, Miss Bowler, will you start us off?
Something about spinach.
Yes, you have to use a book
title. Thousands of spinach.
Very good, yes. Mr. Adams?
The vinegar tree and oil for the lamps of China.
Well, now you've got everything. Oil, vinegar, spinach. All you have to do is throw it out and you've got a dandy salad, Mr. Levant.
Let us be gay.
Oh, pretty. So well timed, too. Mr. Curran.
Seven little peppers.
Seven little peppers?
Five little peppers.
All right.
Don't exaggerate.
Inflation is on.
Listen, right, what kind of a salad do you have with spinach?
A spinach salad, I imagine.
Don't order it.
I'll send it right back. There's Mr. Adams.
How green was my valley?
Oh, greens.
No,
it.
Valley.
How greens was my valley.
You used
greens.
Valley in a salad.
How greens were my valley.
You used greens in the salad.
Not
in
our
house.
You certainly used greens. And you used Mrs. Wiggs of the cabbage patch.
How about salt? The book called Salt.
Why not? That's very good, Mr. Ken. Well, that gives us a salad that anybody would dag at. Now, the next one from E.J. Marchese of the city. Get 3 out of 4 if you can. What famous actress of the past was impersonated by each of the following, who are of the present? First case, Miriam Hopkins. Whom did she impersonate? Miriam Hopkins impersonated what famous actress of the past? These are all, as you see, female impersonators.
Not Lana Turner.
No, no. You're moving too fast, Miss Turner. Miriam Hopkins impersonated Mrs. Leslie Carter in a movie
right.
called The Lady with the Red Hair. That right, Mr. Levant?
That's right, yes.
That gives us one wrong. How about this one? Whom did Alice Faye impersonate? Miss Bowen.
Lillian Russell.
Lillian Russell, yes. In a movie called what?
Called Lillian Russell.
That a girl. That's very good.
They were stuck for a title.
How about Anna Nagel? Whom did she recently impersonate? Mr. Levant.
Queen Victoria.
Yes, that's right. And who? I don't think Queen Victoria was a famous actress of the past.
She could have been. She was very talented.
Yes, but not very, shall we say, glamorous, Mr. Adams?
Marilyn Miller.
No, that's stunning.
No.
Well, whoever was.
This is an actress of the old, fairly remote past.
Was it Nell Gwynn?
Yes, it was Nell Gwynn. In the most.
I was going to say Nurse Cavell. I'm glad he beat me.
Nurse Cavell again would not have been an actress. Mm-hmm. How about Louisa Raina? Miss Bowen?
Anna Held.
Anna Held, yes. What was the picture called?
Ziegfeld.
Yes, the great Ziegfeld, I think it was. How about this one? You boys and girls are much too smart tonight. This is from Georgia M. Lichtenhahn of Germantown, New York. Get 2 out of 3. And it's about gardening. Now, each of these groups of flowers that I'm going to name, there's one flower which is distinctly out of place. You probably feel pretty bad about it. Explain which one it is and why it doesn't belong in this group. Here's the first group. Cup and saucer, aster, campanula, or campanula, as you like, and Canterbury bell. Now, one of those doesn't belong in that group. Which one and why? Miss Bowden.
Cup and saucer?
Does not belong in the group. Why?
Because it's not a flower.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is. You mustn't take me too literally. Cup and saucer is or are a flower.
No,
Miss Kieran?
What's its botanical name?
I don't know. Probably Miss Kieran does.
Well, no, I don't know those names. I don't know what a cup and saucer is, but an aster is not of the type of flower, the campanula, and the that other flower you know.
Canterbury bell.
And to go even further,
the Astor belongs to a Rayflower group.
See, Miss Boland?
Now?
Yes. Well, now, Cup and Saucer apparently belongs to the same, not only is the same family as the Campanula and the Canterbury Bell, but is another name for.
Is that right?
Campanula or Canterbury Bell. The Astor is the one that doesn't belong there. Now, how about this one? Tulip, Jonquil, Narcissus, Baby's Breath. Which one doesn't belong? That clear? Miss Boland?
Yes? Baby's Breath doesn't belong.
At a girl. And why not?
The others are all tuberous, aren't they?
Yes. Is that the same as bulbous?
Yes.
All right. Tuberous is awfully hard for me to say. I'll say bulbous.
Bulbous is like my face.
Anticipating television, are you? How about this one? American Beauty Rose, Rose of Sharon, Tea Rose, Rambler Rose. One of them doesn't belong. Miss Adams.
Rose of Sharon.
Attaboy. Does not belong, and why?
Doesn't belong to the owner.
I don't know. I think it's a
Miss Boland.
It's because it's a shrub. It's not a rose.
It's not a rose at all. Yes,
it doesn't belong to the rose family. I believe it belongs to the... Well, there's several flowers are called roses. The Althea is one of them.
Wait a minute, I didn't get that. Mr. Adams interrupted you. What family does it belong to?
It doesn't belong to the rose family at all. No. But the Rose of Sharon name is applied to several varieties of flowering shrubs, one of which is the Althea.
Yeah, now that's perfectly clear. Now, Mr. Adams, you had some...
I said it's a gal and tobacco rose.
The Rose of Sharon, yes. But it also is, according to my information, a hybrid of the mallow family. I think that's about all we'll have time for. And now, Mr. Cross, venture the guess.
It's just this, ladies and gentlemen, that many of you listening in have smoked a cigarette during the course of our program. But I wonder how many of you took an instant to consider whether or not you got all the smoking enjoyment you paid for. Did your cigarette have genuine mildness? Was its taste just what you wanted? Certainly, if there's doubt on these points, it's worth your while to try Lucky's and make a fair comparison. For in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. The finer, lighter leaf is naturally milder, and finer tobaccos are better tasting, too. Lucky's smoke milder, taste better, because the American Tobacco Company pays the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. For example, 22% more than the market average at Henderson, North Carolina last season. 35% more at Wendell, North Carolina. So it goes at market after market. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. Why not give Lucky's a week's trial and find out for yourself why, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Make that next package you buy Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And thank you, Miss Boland, for brightening Lucky Strike's party so beautifully this evening.
Thank you.
Not at all. Next week, Mr. Sheeran and Mr. Adams will be aided and abetted by our old friend Dean Taylor, who is known from coast to coast and further as a music authority. And our special guest will be William Beebe, the famous naturalist, writer, and deep-sea diver. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question should happen to stump our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now we'll listen to a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, the famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, ladies and gentlemen, is just another way of saying that if you haven't tried a Lucky lately, you don't know what you're missing. By the way, if you're going visiting this weekend, we suggest you take your host or hostess a carton of Lucky's. It's sure to make a hit. Remember, with independent tobacco experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the Web Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
Copyright Golden AB.